keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Well, Jake, it looks like you can put away that Joe Biden yard sign. Old Uncle Joe isn't running. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Glad to be back with you. Hopefully everyone's been having a good week, just like we have been over here at the Anti-Media, covering all this crazy news out there tonight and every day of the week, obviously, because it's always going down. There's always somebody trying to do something, and we're always catching them do it. So thankfully we have the internet here, and we're able to connect with everybody, and make sure you catch us 5 days a week here on Anti-Media Radio on UCY.TV. And if you miss any of our shows, you can go back and watch them on YouTube, UCY TV YouTube channel, or you can watch them in the, or listen to them in the archives here on UCY.TV. And that way you're not out of step with any of the stuff we're talking about, because many times we're talking about topics that carry on to the next week, or we're referencing shows that we've done the week before, a few days prior. So always keep up to date. Anyway, I'm joined tonight by my awesome co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, bro?
Hey, just watching the insanity like everyone else, dude.
Same here, man. Same here. And then Jake. What's up, Jake?
Not much. Just noticing this Back to the Future Biff Tannen is literally based on Donald Trump article, and slightly bitter and jealous that I didn't write it. Given that that's been my go-to joke for the last half year. But, hey, John Vibe jumped on it. Good on him. Good on him.
So now that we know that Biff's probably going to get the nod, since we have that correlation going, did you guys see Bernie Sanders getting played by Larry David?
Yes.
I mean, yep. There you go, man. So even though the establishment's probably going to hate it, maybe we are going to have that weird political shift, because – maybe people realize if Bush or Clinton gets back in the presidency in any way, shape, or form, I mean, we're going to go and have a major war almost imminently.
Yeah, man.
We're
going
to have a major war regardless. So.
Yeah, but Bernie may stall it, and so might Trump. You know, maybe they'll stall it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, xenophobia 2016, right? No, I'm just kidding. oh, man. Jake, man, you opened the show up on Monday talking about getting your Biden yard signs out. How happy are you that Biden isn't running?
I'm pretty happy. It just would have created just an extra level to the spectacle. I was watching it live this morning, and I think I breathed an audible sigh of relief. And then I fell asleep because he talked for 3 hours afterwards. No, I'm happy. Like you pointed out, I mean, he's been a major architect of some pretty hideous prison legislation. He was an unapologetic cheerleader for the Patriot Act, and of course he's a warmonger like Obama. And so it basically would have been just a different version of Hillary. I think the reason, in fact, Hillary even went against TPP to begin with recently was to have an avenue of opposition towards Biden. It was a calculated political move. So really the only difference between those two candidates would have been that TPP differentiation.
Yeah, and you know, to me, I know DB's got his own opinions on what's going on with the Democratic Party, but you know, to me that kind of shows that they're comfortable that Hillary is not going to get knocked down. I think they're pretty comfortable with Biden not entering in. They're not concerned about Bernie Sanders getting the nomination. I think they're pretty comfortable with Hillary. Part of it has to do with the fact that the people that were running the Benghazi hearing has basically turned it into a spectacle. There is some very real information that could come out of that Benghazi stuff, but it's not going to, because it would make the Republicans look bad too. And we all know that this is just some partisan sideshow. This is what it's become. If you want to know what really was going on with Benghazi, Stormclouds Gathering has a great video about it. It has to do with the CIA running guns from Libya, using that embassy as kind of a hub to run these guns into Syria to arm the rebels to help overthrow the Assad. I mean, it's a really complicated thing what was going on over there, and the Republicans are not interested in digging into that rabbit hole. You know what I mean?
That's probably why it drives Hillary so crazy, is because she wants so badly to be let people in on what's really going on, but she's taking it for the team. You know, I'm not going to let him in on the deep state war secrets.
Hey, that's an optimistic way of looking at it.
I'm an eternal optimist, Nick. You know that.
Yeah, well, you know, the Benghazi thing, the Republicans, you know, they were going to use it to slam Hillary once she got the nomination. I don't think that's going to happen. Like I said, I think it'll probably turn out making the Republicans look just as bad as the Democrats. And if it can't be used in a partisan type of way, then they're just not going to do it. And proof is out there. If you look at the Benghazi hearing, it's been made a ridicule of. It's just completely come out and fallen apart. It's no longer taken seriously. Nobody's listening to this conversation anymore about Benghazi, and nobody gives a shit anymore. And
sad, though.
Because
really there's no Middle East situation right now without that gun running route. I mean, I don't know if people understand that if a big war does pop off, it's because of Benghazi.
But explain that a little bit, DB.
Well, I mean, the thing that happened to Chris Stevens was he found out his embassy was running by the ton load, small arms, RPGs, and even SAMs to these guys under the pretense that they're going to keep Libya in our sphere, when in fact these weapons just flooded into the Middle East, especially into the anti-Assad groups. And these fools are armed to the teeth, and it takes a superpower like Russia to take these guys out because they have our weapons.
Yeah, man, exactly. And so, you know, the truth about Benghazi is not going to be told by this congressional hearing. And that's just, you know, that's just not going to happen, because the Republicans, in fact, you know, this is this entire movement to get rid of Assad has been going on. It's been in the planning at least back to 1996. If anyone wants to get really in depth on this, I suggest you go over to the website on theantimedia.org and read the article called Israel, ISIS, Syria, and Iraq. It's all part of the plan. It's a neoconservative geopolitical plan that was laid out by this guy named Wormser back in 1996. And there was leaked diplomatic cables through WikiLeaks that dated back to 2006 that showed that they were actively moving on this plan and looking for ways to destabilize Assad. Now, keep in mind that you know, the Arab Spring didn't pop off until years later, until, you know, the later 2000s. So in 2006, they were already trying to destabilize Assad, and then the Arab Spring pops off a couple years later, and then that's when they made their move. That's when Libya happened. That's when all this stuff happened. They moved all the weapons into Syria to help them overthrow the government. And we all know what's happening now. It's turned into a bloody stalemate, a horrible civil war, just massive, massive amounts of people being displaced. 11 million people total in Syria have been displaced. Many of them have become refugees, over 300,000 people dead, and our government is partially, not partially, in a major way responsible. Hillary Clinton is very responsible for this, and she's not going to get any of the blame. The Benghazi hearing that's been going on is so superficial, it's not even making any, it's not taking, it, not looking at this topic in any depth at all. It's just trying to find, oh, well, let's try to blame Hillary Clinton for the death of this ambassador and see if she didn't, you know, do enough to protect him. And, like, let's just ignore the fact that the CIA was running all these arms through that embassy and stuff. I mean, this stuff is such a joke, man. It's such a joke. And the days of there being congressional hearings where they actually dug into shit, like, you remember back in the day when they dug into what was that CIA thing where they infiltrated the media? I can't remember the damn name of it. Mockingbird, right? Mockingbird, yeah. So, yeah. You know, remember there was actually a real congressional hearing where they were like, you know, talking about how the CIA is infiltrating the media. It's like now it's just a big joke. Just a big, oh.
And what did Mockingbird do except to cause the conglomeration of the media into the six fingers of it right now? I mean, that's what happened. It didn't bust a monopoly or do anything of lasting nature. It just made these guys buy each other out.
Right. It was almost like a psyop, really.
I wouldn't doubt it, man. So, yeah, this whole Benghazi thing. Look, Hillary Clinton is responsible for what went on in Libya. She helped lobby for that war to begin with. The whole getting rid of Gaddafi thing. That country in Libya now is just it's also in a state of civil war. And I don't know the last time the mainstream media has talked about anything going on in Libya outside of a few weeks ago. They talked about a drone strike, how it hit some guy from Al Qaeda or whatever. But, you know, we overthrew the government of Libya in 2011, and now that country is locked into a brutal civil war. There's been at least 50,000 dead that are confirmed. It's probably a lot higher. It's probably into the hundreds of thousands. Hillary Clinton, Obama, all these guys were part of this. And Libya, keep in mind, Libya was part of this Wormser plan. This all goes back to what General Wesley Clark was saying. Libya was one of the countries that they wanted to overthrow. You know, he talked about them overthrowing seven countries, and Libya was one of them. So, you know, they've been working on this angle for a long time, and they use the Arab Spring as an excuse to carry it out. You know, and it also makes you wonder if the Arab Spring itself wasn't, you know, engineered as well. Which I wouldn't doubt. I mean, I think there was definitely some organicness to the Arab Spring, because even in the Sunni Gulf states, there was uprisings in Saudi Arabia and Qatar and all these countries. But on that side of the spectrum, we allowed those governments to crack down on those protests. We allowed them to repress their people. We allowed them to fire live rounds in the protesters. We allowed them to imprison all these guys. In fact, there's a guy that was caught up in those protests in Saudi Arabia right now. He's about to be crucified. He's about to be crucified by the Saudi Arabian government for protesting during the Arab Spring. And this is a sickening story. There's been a lot of international outcry to try to get to stop this from going on. But the U.S. government has been completely silent. Now, keep in mind, if Saudi Arabia were Libya, we would have already been dropping bombs on that country. You know what I mean? If Qatar was Syria, we would have been dropping bombs on that country as well. But these, we got to keep in mind, these are our oil allies. These are our guys that help us fund all this stuff that we do over there in the Middle East.
They are the petrodollar.
And exactly. that journalist would be a hero in the aforementioned scenarios you've just supplied. He'd be a hero and not just someone sitting waiting to be murdered.
Exactly, man. Exactly. So we got a couple callers on the line. We have a pretty open platform tonight. We don't have any special guests joining us. So I'm going to go to a couple callers. So just to lay out the ground rules here with the callers, you can pretty much talk about whatever you want to talk about unless I ask you a specific question. Make sure you keep your radio muted behind you, and make sure, unless you're in a really quiet place, keep your microphone muted. When I come to you, I'll mention you by your area code, and then you'll be live on the air, and then we'll go ahead and have a little conversation there. Anyone else wanting to call in tonight, feel free to join us, 718-717-8296. I do want to talk about Back to the Future. That as a kid, you know, that was like my favorite movie of all time. I think there are some very interesting things that we can pull out of that whole topic, and it's been trending today all day on Facebook. And of course, our meme for tonight kind of alluded to Back in the Future. And how maybe if Marty McFly had come to present day 2015, how he would have been like, oh shit, maybe it's not 2015. Maybe I'm stuck in 1984 with the NSA spying on all these people, with perpetual wars going on all over the place, with you know, the police state repressing people, killing people, gunning people down in the streets. There was just a guy today that we covered on the anti-media that was, I mean, his name is Corey Jones, and he was a church musician. His car broke down on the side of the road, and a cop rolls up and ends up gunning him down. You know, and this guy doesn't deserve to die. I mean, what the hell, dude? So anyway, let's go to some callers. First, we're gonna go to 205. You're on the line first. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio. What do you want to talk about? Okay. See, I hate when that happens.
That guy was talkative.
Hey, that was a really good point he made there.
Yeah, I concur.
Anyway, 205, if you come back to us, you'll be on next. We have another caller on the line from 717 area code. How's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio. What do you want to talk about? Oh, another great point there. Oh, man.
Killing it.
Anyway, all right, I'm going to drop these calls and make room for some new callers. Anyone, if you guys are listening, call back and make sure you, when we come to you, make sure you answer. Otherwise, we're going to have to drop your call. Anyway, so on the topic of Back to the Future, I mean, Jake, what do you make of this Biff thing? I mean, apparently the writer from Back to the Future 2, which is the one where, you know, he goes into the future and Biff had basically become, more or less become president or whatever, was at least in charge of things. And it was like a total dystopia, a total hellhole. And the guy, you know, the guy that wrote the movie is basically saying, yeah, Donald Trump was the inspiration for that, for that character.
Yeah, I just read part of that. I'm still literally chewing my knuckles off with jealousy that I didn't make the connection sooner. But that said, let me say I literally watched Back to the Future 2 today because it was on, and it's one of my favorite movies. And there is a moment when Marty McFly says, "Hey, you know, they're on the roof," and he's like, "Hey, Biff, don't you think they'll be able to match the bullet to the gun?"
Hello.
The police will catch you on this. And Biff goes, "Kid, I own the police." And you know, it's true. He does own the police in the movie. And that's sort of, you know, I guess it's I don't know how analogous that is to present day.
You know, it is interesting. I mean, there was you know, I guess back in the 80s, there was this kind of naive understanding of the police that where people thought that maybe, you know, the police were actually representative.
Back then.
Sorry, the person called back and they didn't mute their phone. So if you're listening, call back in. Make sure you mute your phone. We'll come to you. You know, there maybe back in the 80s, there was this naive understanding of the police and that, you know, the police are good people. But keep in mind, it was only a few years later when they started, when the beating of Rodney King came out, and then we started understanding, oh, shit, the police aren't really doing a good job out there. They're beating people down, especially minorities, and they're doing not very nice things. And now as we come along with this technology, something that the Back to the Future movies failed to predict, which was the smartphone. Now that we have these smartphones and we have citizen journalism and the decentralized video recording abilities and live streaming and the you know, uploading stuff on the internet quickly without it being deleted by the cops, now we're starting to see it even worse and worse, you know, to the point where, you know, that line in the movie really does predict what's going on right now, because the cops are owned by the government. I mean, obviously the cops. Oh,
well, they're owned by
the. It's not a conspiracy theory. Yeah, the cops work for the government, guys.
But in the movie, it's not so much the government; it's that he's this, you know, billionaire tycoon or whatever. But I mean, that's absolutely correct. I mean, there's no, you know, a CEO, a big CEO in you know, most towns, really does probably have a certain modicum of control over the police. I mean, that's the fact that that's obvious. Everyone's like, well, yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, the fact that that's obvious shows how bad it's gotten, that we're so, you know, we're so wrapped up in this police state, we don't even, it's more than just a police state, a corporatocracy police state, that we're so wrapped up in it, we don't even understand it fully.
They are the tip of the dick that is the deep state.
The tippa.
go further with that analogy. What happens?
Well, you know, it's called stop and frisk for a reason.
Yeah.
DB, yeah. Man, yeah, you know, you've made the point several times about how the cops are really the enforcement arm of the oligarchy, and I think that's completely correct. The caller from 206 is back. I'm going to get to you in a few minutes. Just give me a second here. I want to make a point. One thing that is pretty interesting, and I know I get this from a firsthand experience. Several years ago, we did a protest against the Federal Reserve here in San Diego. And it was just a group of, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 of us, bunch of harmless young people out there. And, you know, we don't have a Federal Reserve branch here in San Diego, so we went out and we were protesting around the banks. And there's a movement called Chalkupy where people go out and they write messages in chalk on the sidewalk in front of banks and in front of police stations and that kind of thing. And that's all we were doing. We were out there carrying signs. We had bullhorns. We're yelling out messages and stuff. The people that are artistically inclined were out there writing messages on the sidewalk. I wasn't one of those people because I have zero artistic abilities when it comes to drawing and visual arts and that kind of thing. I mean, I can talk for 1,000 years, but I can't write. I can't draw, I mean, at all. But so anyway, all that was going on, and we found out that we had an couple undercover cops attached to our protest. Like I said, it was only 15, 20 of us young people, very harmless. We weren't doing anything to show any kind of threat of violence or any kind of intention to do any kind of vandalism or anything like that. It was a completely overbearing situation. And then, you know, we were in front of Bank of America. We're doing the chalking stuff, and the security guard at the bank came out and he said, "Hey, you know, you guys can't do that. You got to leave." And we told him, "No, that's not correct. There was a court case here in San Diego, actually, that set a precedent nationally that basically said chalking on the sidewalk is covered under the First Amendment." So we told him to, you know, F off, basically. And we continued to do our thing, and we were just on the sidewalk protesting. And then the I wouldn't call them riot police, but they were, you know, the more heavily armed police that were pretty much ready for a confrontation. They came, and, you know, this is where it really hit me. They came and they formed a line on the bank property facing towards us, protecting the bank from us, a couple of harmless protesters. You know, and this brings us back to that line that you mentioned, Jake. About in the Back to the Future movie, how Biff said he owns the police. Well, I saw it firsthand. The cops are on the side of the banks. They're not on the side of the protesters. They weren't there to protect my freedom of speech. They were there to protect the bank's property.
Well, what'd they think? A bunch of young kids with chalk were going to make a run on the bank?
Apparently, man. Apparently, but that's what happened. And you know what? We took that opportunity to talk straight into the faces of these cops and just, you know, tell them, like, what in the hell are you guys doing standing on the bank? They were on the bank property. They weren't on the sidewalk. They were on the bank property. We're like, what are you guys doing? Like, you're supposed to be out here protecting our First Amendment rights, and you're over there on the bank trying to help them. You know, is the bank paying you guys? I mean, because that's what it seems like. I thought we were paying you guys.
Isn't that why they say the cop slogan is, "We hate our children"?
It might as well be, you know. All right, so we do have a couple callers on the line. First, I'm going to go to 206. Thanks for calling back in. You're live on the Anti-Media Radio. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, what's up, man? It's Cassius. Well, I don't know, relevant to what you just said, yeah, that's another lesson learned from going out and protesting and staying active. The first thing that comes to my mind is, like, another lesson learned from being active, you know, so I'm focused on creating culture and just proliferating this whole culture that we're creating, you know, whether it be like whatever media you produce or if you organize a protest or whatever it is. This is all just a great renaissance of activity. Let's keep it going, you know.
Yeah, man. And you know, the more that people organize, and, you know, the 20 of us that were out there that day protesting the banks and the Federal Reserve, we got a real dose of what was really going on, you know. And sometimes that's all you need to really change your mind or put you on a different path. And to me, that was really when I first understood what was really going on. The banks aren't there. The cops aren't there protecting us. They were there protecting the banks. And that's you know, it's just it was just eye-opening. It blew my mind. It was crazy.
Wow, that type of firsthand experience is priceless, man. That's priceless. I think it's great to just, like, talk about these things and recognize the precise things that are of value from protesting, you know? I think, like, it would be cool to recognize the exact reasons for why you protest so that people that are less familiar with it can understand in, like, an organized way. Like, this is why you protest. You learn lessons like this. You can have a show of unity and then maybe develop organizations or make something out of the people you met at the protest. You know, there's just, let's list these things, you know, let's dive even deeper into why, you know?
Hey, Nick, did you walk up to the police and hand over a flower?
No, I
pot brownie.
I offered them some donuts, but they weren't too happy about it.
Can't we just put in some oil into every donut mix in the country?
some what, cannabis oil?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It'd be nice, man. It'd be a good idea. Yeah. I bet you the police brutality rates would go down a lot. Maybe they'd start questioning the authorities and things like that. That's one of the reasons why I think they banned cannabis, because not only is it
oh, yeah,
medically
you mean
dangerous.
If there was a bunch of high cops, they wouldn't do their job, Nick, which is terrorizing us?
not only is cannabis dangerous to the medical establishment, because there's so many different uses for it, between just simple pain management to cancer treatments and even seizures, man. There's been so many cases of children being treated with cannabis oil, and it's stopping them from having these life-threatening seizures, and that they're actually able to live at least partially normal lives once they get on this cannabis oil stuff.
And people with depression and anxiety benefit from it too. And think about how big of a racket that is the medication, pharmaceutical medications for depression and anxiety.
Huge industry, huge industry.
Decentralizer. Oh man, I know a lot of people that have been personally affected by all that SSRI stuff, and I think something about that. Yeah, damn, dude. I know someone that was just forced into taking medication because he got locked up because he had some kind of outburst of anger in some public place or something because some issue with his kid in CVS, and he was forced to take medication in jail. And now he feels, like, extremely depressed off the medication he was forced to take. So
yep, that stuff, it sticks with you, unfortunately. To your point, yeah, I mean, Antimedia has reported on how they're giving amphetamines in the form of Adderall to toddlers now.
I wrote that, yeah.
You wrote that? All right, man, that was a great article. Man, I mean, good God.
That's about a year ago.
And yet, if you give the kid a little bit of weed, it would be considered like child abuse. If you gave the kid
weed. Oh, man, weed is a decentralizer. That's what it is.
Cassius, you gotta write an article about how many families have moved to Colorado to heal their own children.
Yeah, and that's it's happening, but with a lot of families now. The other point I wanted to get to with the cannabis, and you know, not only is it the medical stuff, but I truly believe that it makes people think a little differently. I think it does make people question authority, or at least look at the status quo and maybe ask questions about what's really going on. And I think that's another reason why it's been illegal for so long, because I don't think they've known about the medical benefits of it for as long as, you know, I think some people have known about it, but it hasn't been common knowledge for very long. But I think back in the day when they first started banning it, you know, back during the prohibition years and even a little bit before that, they were worried about it making people think differently and subverting authority structures and power structures and things like that. And so, you know, if we were to put cannabis oil into the donuts, DB, that's a great idea. I'd vote for that, even though I don't plan on voting this round. If that was on the ballot, I'd support that.
Let's petition Bernie to put that in.
You know,
Bernie could probably benefit from a little bit of marijuana, in my opinion.
I think he's high all the time.
He's got a lot of aggression issues. Maybe that's just the Larry David version of it.
That's only when he sees McCain's face.
Larry David's version was like,
he's going to be the first passive-aggressive president. Like, you know, we're going to try to do things better while we bomb this country.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Nick,
well,
sorry. I think I derailed you a little bit.
Oh no, man. No. We were getting past that. But great point on the Back to the Future cop part, man. Huge.
Yeah.
Point.
I realized. Wow. What a prescient line that they, at the time they didn't even realize I really don't think the movie is that incisive into the future. I mean, that's pretty much the only cool future thing that they got right. I mean, there's no the Jaws marquee is not coming out of in 3D attacking us, and we don't have hoverboards yet. So,
there were a lot of parallels though between Biff and Trump, and that was pretty funny that the writer is out there saying, yeah, you know, Trump was the one of the inspirations for the character. You know, the casino, the hotel, you know, the whole thing. It's very and Biff even acts a lot like Trump as well, looks like him too, and so that, you know, that part of it's pretty funny.
Well, I wonder if he made his first million off of betting on a sports almanac book.
No, Trump inherited a lot of his.
Yeah, he inherited $100 million from his dad through government entitlements, I believe.
A lot of it was.
Nope, it was a single bet on the Yankees.
Okay, we had another caller, but they dropped as well. People are shy to talk to us. I think they're a little intimidated by Jake.
No,
I'm just kidding.
Did anyone actually read the drone papers? Because I started to read them, but I had more work to do.
Oh man, yeah. I didn't read the papers themselves. I read some info on The Intercept, who broke the story, and I'm really happy about The Intercept getting some of these leaks. And there's a lot of people putting leaks out there right now. I think Edward Snowden really inspired a lot of people to get out there and really put this stuff out there. The drone papers, man. One factoid that I saw that was really ugly was that like 90% of the people, 90% of the time, it's not terrorists, you know. And I think a lot of people like us that are already following this stuff, we kind of already pretty much assume that. But you know, to have that on paper and the facts, you know, and the facts that you know, the Obama administration and all the other people that are involved in the drone strikes know about that, and yet they still continue to do them. In fact, they, you know, are doing them, you know, just more and more and more. That is some really damning information. I can't believe that is going on, and that's just makes me sick.
They're not targeting terrorists. Who are they targeting?
Well, they're supposedly targeting terrorists, but their methods of targeting are very loose. In fact, a lot of the targeting is done by cell phone location, GPS on cell phones, and that's what they target.
Metadata algorithms.
Yeah,
and it's an auto launch. There's not even, you know, that movie Good Kill that just came out? That's so 5 years ago. There's no more people doing any of this stuff, really, unless it's... Now the people controlling these drones are the ones that are escorting the bombers in case Russia or somebody else tries to send MiGs at them.
Right. Yeah, DB, I had read something about how a lot of this stuff is, a lot of these drone strikes are automated based on metadata, which is seriously has to be one of the most terrifying things ever. I mean,
well, yeah. When it gets unrolled domestically, it's going to be like that Captain America movie where you just get droned in your home and shit just because you meet an algorithm.
Yeah, and that's
get off Facebook.
And that's, you know, that's already a reality for people in Yemen, Pakistan, Afghanistan,
yep.
Somalia, Libya. I mean, it's already happening to people where it's just like, you know, and here's the sad part is that these terrorists already know that, you know, they're not stupid. They know that this is
they're in,
you know,
bunkers.
Yeah, and they know that they're being targeted for the cell phone, so they use the cell phone, they burn it, or they hand it off to some kid, or they hand it off and plant it
to
somewhere.
A rival.
Yeah, they plant it on a rival, or, you know, throw it in someone's house that they want to see blown up, and then get the drone strikes that house. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, these guys are playing us in our for, you know, on our own games, and it's causing a bunch of civilian casualties. 90% of them.
A million a missile too. Let's not forget why they're doing it.
Yeah, it makes a lot of money for these guys. A lot of money.
Hey, don't worry about it. I'm writing a screenplay about the revolution, and I'm hoping that life imitates art.
Is it called Drone, A Love Story?
Yes. How did you guess? Oh, my God.
Yeah, man.
We
I mean,
have a duty to observe this, especially DARPA, because to me it seems like DARPA is a central node in the development of these things that really do play out, you know? I've learned to focus on, like, the technology, and then it becomes reality. It's crazy. Assessing the probability of something, it's crazy.
The craziest thing is that these new casualty ratings coming out are as a result of heat signature from satellites. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but as a result of the ongoing drone war, we've been able to calculate, due to the decrease in heat signature, what kind of kill ratio we have. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous right now. They're talking about 90 casualties per incident, meaning every time a drone bombs, there's 90 casualties.
And, you know, I had some inside information from somebody a few years ago that was telling me that, look, you know, a lot of these drones are being the bombs are dropping based on computer algorithm, not based on somebody pushing the button. And I didn't believe it. I'm like, that's just too ridiculous. I refused to believe it. But, you know, it turns out not only from the drone papers that recently came out, there was another leak about a year ago that also confirmed it. And that is something that's very, very scary. And as DB was mentioning, it's metadata, it's cell phones. All of us have cell phones. They all know, they know all of our locations as well. If and when, you know, looking back, and people are going to write this off as a conspiracy theory for a long until it finally starts happening, and then it's like, oh shit, you guys were right all along. But look, all the shit that we've been doing with the war on terror, all this post 9/11 stuff, the Patriot Act, the NSA, you know, the MRAPs, and, you know, all that shit that we had built for Iraq and stuff, all that shit ended up coming home. You know what I mean? It all ended up like, okay, we're done with using it in Iraq. Let's bring it home and put it in the police force. When is it going to be when these drones are going to be targeting us on our metadata domestically? And, you know, there was a recent law passed, I think it was in North Dakota, that allowed for the drones, for the law enforcement drones, to become armed. I'm sure everyone heard about that. So, you know, they're already passing legislation where it's like, okay, we can now start arming these domestic drones. Of course, it's like, okay, it's only going to be with tasers and stuff like that for now, you know, but how long is it going to be before these really militaristic, this really militaristic drone warfare comes home to roost, man? I mean, it's comes off as something that's very fringe right now, but I don't put it out of the realm of reality in the next 5-10 years.
Didn't recently in SoCal a sniper from a sheriff's helicopter shoot and kill a guy on a high-speed chase on the freeway? I think there was a story that just happened maybe last month.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be drones, man. There's not going to be a high-speed chase anymore. There's not going to be even a foot pursuit anymore. A drone's just going to come up and cap you in the head, and that'll be it.
Jake, what do you got to say about this?
More responsibility to the chargers, yeah.
Our only hope is artificial intelligence.
Or a spiritual revolution, because how are we going to compete on a physical one?
Whatever we need to do to establish a culture of people knowing about this, whatever means necessary to establish a culture of people having interest in knowing about this. That's the only realistic way to make more people care. You know, like and, embed this. Yeah.
And we need
whether
the youth.
Spiritual or whatever it is.
The youth need to have a hacker revolution.
And the youth are watching twerking videos on their cell phones high on Adderall.
But
the
they can all code,
man,
too.
I'm to youth. I'm to youth. I got my youth. Well, they're my army.
You're different, buddy. But
yeah, they're my army.
You're
youth.
A millennial. What is the?
I'm a millennial.
Cassius, are you still 19?
Man. Hell yeah, I'm still 19.
Hey, enjoy it. Enjoy it, man.
Oh, I am. Oh yeah.
yeah, man. I mean, it's I think that's what we're working towards here at the Anti-Media, but it is an uphill battle, man. It's like swimming upstream. It's, you know, people, the masses are, you know, they choose the path of least resistance, you know, for the most part, and they want what's easy. And if they're getting fed a bunch of information that's real easy to consume, they don't have to search it out. If they're being given a bunch of, you know, easy ways of doing things, even though it's going to be their own demise eventually, I don't think that it's very much like that boiling frog phenomenon where it's, you know, as long as the boiling is slow, you know, they're not going to realize it until it's like, oh shit, like we're in a total police state control grid and we have no other options, you know. But unfortunately, you know, that's exactly what's happening right now, and I guess that's what we're trying to, you know, help break out of with the Anti-Media and other outlets out there and other movements that are going on. But you know, it's a uphill battle. And I'm not giving up on it anytime soon, but I just, you know, we got to be vigilant with it because it's going to be a long, bitter fight. And we talked about this last week a little bit, about how easy it is to get discouraged with all this stuff. But you know, that's the thing is that the struggle for freedom, it's an intergenerational. It's been going on for millennia, man. They've been fighting this battle since the dawn of civilization. We can't sit here and like be involved for, you know, I've been involved for about 4 years now, you know, and I can't sit here and it's like, oh, 4 years later, it's like, I'm giving up because it's been 4 years and nothing's changed, you know what I mean? We need 400 years, dude. Nothing's going to happen in 4 years, you know? Yeah, we can make little victories. We may have little setbacks and things like that. But, you know, it's a generational battle. I mean, we got to keep fighting the kids. We got to get the youth involved.
The children.
It's a lifestyle and entire culture. Like, we have to cement this in every possible way of life, or it's not going to change. But we started. I think that we can absolutely celebrate victory in the last 4 years because, I mean, look at all this. There's a foundation now to a whole culture that can be created. And back, like, in 30 years, the 2010s decade will be known for this. We got to make it known for this.
Yeah, you make a good point. I think the mobilization of activists online, I think recent achievements that Anti-Media has noted, most notably just the demise of certain corporate, you know, profits like Monsanto and McDonald's. These are victories we should celebrate, absolutely. And to Nick's point, and Nick, you said it on the last show, which is, yeah, this is intergenerational. You have to think about how this is going to spread down to your children, to your children's children, and just kind of creating the foundation, the platform for which, you know, we will continue to fight things like the TPP, even though it's probably going to be passed, but we're going to have to try and dismantle it.
There's a literal war on children going on right now. I mean, if you talk to anybody who has a child, they'll tell you Common Core is trying to dumb their children down. They'll tell you the schools, the meals they get are complete shit when they're there. So when the kid gets home, they're completely tired and irritable because they ate disgusting food. I mean, it's even hepatitis vaccine at birth is a slap in the face to anyone with any common sense, because your child's not going to get that unless you have a filthy, drug-ridden cesspool of a home. So why are we doing these things? Because there's a war on children, because there's a war on humanity and the future generations, dude. That's really what's going on.
Yeah, man. And you know what? One thing that I've noticed that it's a really good sign. I've noticed that a lot of people that are followers of the Anti-Media are young parents. And I think a lot of people, once they have a kid, and they see this stuff happening to their kids, it helps lead them into this path of like, oh, they start questioning what the hell's going on. It's like, oh, well, your six-year-old has been asking too many questions in class, so we got to go ahead and diagnose them with ADD and stick them on these meds. And that's when the parents are like, wait, what the hell? And then they go online, they start doing a little research, and then they find our website, and they're like, oh, shit, what? This is going on? It's like, oh. And then they start questioning things. And, you know, I've noticed a lot of the people that follow me on my own personal rantings on Facebook, Nick Burnaby on Facebook. You know, a lot of my friends are young parents that are really waking up to what's going on and this agenda out there to really stick all of these kids on medications and dumb them down and like force them into very, you know, obedient lifestyles and things like that.
And why is there so much childhood cancer? Just ask yourself that. And why is Colorado the only place? Why is Colorado the magnet right now? I mean, we all know what Denver is in reality. Why are all these children being pulled there? I mean, it's a crazy thing going on right now.
It is. It's like, very interesting. Go ahead, Cassius.
Like, we've kind of passed a milestone this year. We passed a lot of milestones, but at some point, like, we individually have to say that we're going to go to some next level, or, you know, maybe there's a whole bunch of next levels. And I just think that we have to cement this culture in every possible way that we can, in music and art, in our everyday practices of what we purchase. I think it would be cool to write, like, books on the philosophy of our era. Think about, like, other periods of history and what we remember those by. Like, we're making history right now. A lot of people don't realize that. I feel like a lot of people have this attitude as if we're in some kind of postmodern era where there's no more, like, doing these things that people did in all other eras of history, like record history and, like, write about the philosophies and doctrines and practices of this era, you know? I don't see, like, let's have a renaissance, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. And we have a great article on the anti-media right now. I can't get fully in-depth on it because it's just so – there's so much information there. But I'm encouraging everyone to go read it because it's a really great article. It's called The Price You Pay for Speaking the Truth in America, Jeremy Hammond's Life in Prison. For those not familiar with Jeremy Hammond, he's the guy – he was part of Anonymous. He was a hacker. He was the guy that was responsible for the Stratfor hacks, which is a CIA contractor. And he broke out – he broke free a bunch of information about some stuff that they were doing. And keep in mind, they were doing a bunch of criminal activity. You know, Stratfor was – very much like the same company, very similar to what the company Edward Snowden was working for. They were doing a bunch of very illegal activities on behalf of the CIA, and this guy Jeremy Hammond basically hacked them and showed them, put the information out there. Barrett Brown, which was the journalist that basically he was divulging a lot of the information to, both him and Jeremy Hammond wound up in prison. Jeremy Hammond's going to be locked away until 2020, and that's the earliest he'll be released. We have an exclusive story on the anti-media by Rihanna Ruiz, which is one of our awesome writers that has been in contact with him while he's been in prison. And we're going to try to get her on the program next week sometime, hopefully, to kind of talk a little bit more about what is going on with him. But, you know, this is one of the guys that he is part of that culture, man, I think. And he if you look at his interviews that he gave prior to him being locked up, you know, he was using hacktivism for justice, you know, and he believed in it. And there's a lot of people out there that do the same thing. People within the collective of Anonymous and all the hackers that do their thing out there, and all these whistleblowers stepping forward. You know, it really is. Cassius, you're right, man. It's becoming a culture, dude. And there's people out there that are willing to put their livelihoods, their lives, their necks on the line to divulge this information because they see it as an injustice, man. And these kind of people, these are the real heroes. Edward Snowden, Jeremy Hammond, Barrett Brown. I mean, Barrett Brown,
Chelsea Manning,
Chelsea Manning, of course, man. And, you know, Barrett Brown went to jail for hyperlinking. He hyperlinked to one of these hacked files, and he went to jail for it. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, I didn't know that.
And so the question is, these people are risking their lives so we have this information and that we can disseminate it on a mass platform. Are people listening? And it ties into the children discussion. By the time these children come of age, are they going to be absolutely actually absorbing these messages? Are they going to be able to understand what the drone papers mean and why it's wrong? Are they going to be so desensitized that the actions of the whistleblowers are in vain? That's my fear.
This is exactly how people say that a consciousness revolution is necessary before this, because what that actually means to me is a foundation of desire to even look into this stuff. So the question is, like, there are these foundational things to even have an audience for these amazing acts. How do we do this? We could solidify it in art and music and stuff. We could actually make concerted efforts as nationwide or local activist groups to go out and deliver this information to people in ways that it's never been delivered before. What if we actually found a way to get information out to common people that would make them listen? How do we strategize and do that? I don't think that necessarily going out in public and handing out flyers is going to be the most effective strategy. So let's go beyond that. How can we reach the people that have truly no intention of even listening to this in the first place?
There I like has the way to be you're thinking, man.
Yeah, that's exactly what this next step is, and that's what we're trying to do with the Free Communities Movement, actually. See, we have several programs that we're getting started right now. Me and Tony Guerin from the Common Ground Movement, we're working with our organization, the Free Communities Movement, to make these structures of people that can participate in this culture. One of them is called the People's Economic Alliance. It'll probably have a different name, but what it is pretty much a kind of bind, a union between different independent businesses of every type of possible business you can imagine. And the idea of this is to create just an archive of independent businesses so that someone can spend their money to get their goods and services from real people that can use that money. And it's actually putting these principles into use. There's going to be basically allyship between activist groups. That will be another FCM program. It's all kinds of things like this that, I want to see a flourishing renaissance of free communities movement type central organizations, decentralized but central organizations of activist groups, like Houston Free Thinkers, like a type community activist organizations too. I learned a lot from that group too.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. And I think music is another way of going about it. Looking back at like John Lennon and figures like that back in the day in the 60s and stuff, man, that stuff was running rampant and it helped cause the anti-war movement and stuff like that. I watched a documentary the other day about this guy. I can't remember his name. John something. Damn, I wish I could remember it. But John Denver, that's his name. And I watched a documentary about him and how he became part of the anti-war movement after becoming aware of it, and his music helped inspire people to get out there on the streets and oppose the Vietnam War and stuff. And I agree with you 100%, man. It's got to be much more of a cultural thing, and it's got to be cool, and it's got to be the thing that people want to do. And I think we're making strides in that direction. And going back to what Jake and DB were saying with the kids, man, I think we're going to see a diverging culture with these kids. Like, as I mentioned, we got a bunch of these young parents following the anti-media, and a lot of them are my friends, and we communicate all the time. They read our articles, and they're aware of what's going on, and they're teaching their children in a different way. Including LaVon, the woman that hosts our show on Fridays, she raises her children in a very different way, and they're being taught to be aware of all this propaganda and all this kind of stuff, and to be very conscious about what's going on. And I think we're going to see a divergence where there's going to be the iPod parents, and there's going to be the conscious parents, and there's going to be
the
group
indigo
of kids.
Children.
There's going to be a group of kids that are going to be so brainwashed, even worse than the baby boomers. And then there's going to be another group of kids that are going to be so aware of things, so awake, and there's going to be a kind of a cultural clashing there between the two, maybe in the next 15, 20 years. I'm not sure when, but you know, that may be something that we see happening, you know, playing out in the near future. And something to keep an eye on. I remember I was having a conversation online recently. Someone posted a meme. You know those memes where it's like, here's me not giving a shit because I don't have any kids or whatever. And one of my friends kind of posted something like saying like, oh, I'm having kids because I'm having a bunch of activist babies and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, well that's kind of cool. You know, looking at it that way. And you know, I think we're going to see that happening. But you know, we're yet to find out how it plays out. But I have a feeling it's going to be something really positive. And so I guess we're going to have to see. Wait and see.
That's real. We have to have kids if we want to make a future for someone to inherit.
We should just start incubating a bunch of activist babies, like in the Matrix.
There should be big, gigantic liberty orgies.
Oh, I think those are already going on.
That's how we'll drop people in, bro.
The kid is born and you're
for freedom.
Listen, your purpose on this earth is to be conscious about how bad war is. That's all you can do.
Your mother and I made you because we were against war.
Yeah, hey, that's a great selling point. There is another awesome article on the Anti-Media written by Claire Bernish, titled Glenn Greenwald. The internet is the front line between freedom and tyranny. I suggest everybody goes and reads that and then watches the video at the end. There's this awesome media activist group out of Germany. They're called Activism, ACTVISM. You can look them up. They have a website. They have a social media and stuff. They're doing a bunch of awesome interviews. They've interviewed Greenwald twice. They've interviewed several whistleblowers. They've interviewed Snowden, and they're putting out a bunch of great videos and just getting down to the issues. But in this one, Greenwald really, really talks about the stakes that are at hand right now with the battle for the free internet. And Greenwald is one of my favorite people. He is one of my I hate to say it, but he's one of my idols. And he's really one of the most brilliant guys out there anywhere, in my opinion. And he's just so well spoken and so well written, and he destroys the mainstream media on a weekly basis. I follow every article that he writes, and half of them are about the mainstream media and how they're manipulating the narrative and things like that. I love this guy. Make sure you guys watch that video, because he really lays out there why it's so important that we fight for the internet and keep it free and keep it, you know, decentralized. And so that's an article to go check out on the Anti-Media. It's on the front page right now. And there's a few more stories that we posted today. One by Kerry Wedler about the FBI report that came out just this week. And it documented police killings in 2014. And now, of course, there's this huge thing about, you know, on Fox News, they keep saying that there's this, oh, there's a war on police and there's a war on cops, and the Black Lives Matter movement is just causing all these people to hate cops and kill cops and all that stuff. Well, you know, we pulled up this FBI report, and it basically debunked that entire myth. There is no war on the cops. There's no war on police. There's a war on us, and the police are spearheading it, as we talked about earlier on in the show. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. There was another story about Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he's been subtly promoting the idea of geoengineering, and you know, that's a whole rabbit hole that I don't want to get into. I know everyone's got their own opinion on that. But there's an article by Derek Bros that's packed full of information about geoengineering and, you know, what Neil deGrasse Tyson is doing promoting that stuff. And, of course, we got more UK news. Anyone out there tonight listening from the UK, we've got a correspondent out in the UK now, so make sure you go check out our Anti-Media UK page. It's now like over 10,000 followers. And so that's really awesome. The page is only like a few weeks old, and we've already got 10,000 followers on it. So
and David Cameron still did have sex with a pig.
David Cameron is probably still having sex with pigs.
That's the profile pic of the page, right?
not exactly. the Canadian elections, pretty interesting. There was a very leftist sweep in Canada, where I guess it's yet to find out how that's going to play out. But Obama called the new
legal pot.
The prime minister designate to congratulate him. He said, hey, bro, sorry, Obama, but we're not supporting your fight against ISIS. We're taking our forces out of Iraq and Syria. That's interesting. They are. They ran on a platform to legalize marijuana in Canada. That's very interesting. Mexico is hearing the legalization of Canada. Here we go. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. The Anti-Media Radio. Peace out.